The GSMA has canceled MWC Barcelona 2020 because of the global concern regarding the coronavirus outbreak.
It's over, Johnny. It's over!
That's it, man. Game over, man. It's game over.
It's over now.
It's done. It's finished.
This is not about money.
Hello and welcome to another telecoms.com podcast. We have got the usual suspect this week of Jamie with his lunch and Ian, who's just had his lunch. What are we going to talk about? We're going to obviously talk about, so this is a week when World Congress got cancelled for the first time in like 30 years or ever, basically. 30 plus years it's been going, so we've got to talk about that.
Has it been going that long, really?
Yeah.
Since the early 90s?
I found that out when
since
I did
2G.
When I did my research.
Bloody hell. I didn't know that.
So there you go.
What's his name? Martin at OpenNet was saying that he went to it even before it was in Cannes, which I didn't know existed. But
okay, well, so can you save that for when we actually start?
Yeah, sorry. I thought we'd be gone. But...
Jesus Christ. Okay. Yes, we're going to talk about that. And then also, yesterday, Ian and I went to Ericsson's pre-Mobile Congress thing, which obviously
alternative
was a bit weird.
Mobile Congress,
yeah, because there was no Mobile Congress for it to pre. Mm-hmm. So we'll talk a little bit about that, and then Jamie's been writing about the situation in India, where the government wants loads of money and they might drive everyone bankrupt except Jio, which would be a bit weird. And if he remembers, we're going to also talk about how upset the Americans are about our Huawei policy. Okay. Oh yes, and I forgot that last week, didn't I, Pierre? And if you're watching it on YouTube or on the site or on Facebook, you can also listen to it on SoundCloud or iTunes or other podcasting platforms. Okay, so Mobile Congress. So we got, we've been getting tons of reads. I don't know, you don't really track them yourself, do you, on light reading?
Well, Ray says we're doing pretty well at the moment.
Yeah,
so,
we can get tons of reads because basically, to recap on the sequence of events, about a week and a half ago, LG pulled out. And they were the first major presence to pull out of Mobile Congress. This is all because everyone was worried about coronavirus and basically Barcelona turned into this massive human petri dish where everyone went. And by the way, I think I've got a bit of a cold brewing right now. I've got a warning, so I hope it's not coronavirus.
Bunged up within the last hour. I don't know what the incubation
period
is of
I'm
this
feeling,
thing.
But... I'm feeling it a little bit, if I'm honest. I don't think you can catch it through watching videos or listening to stuff, so I think you're all right.
No, you come from sitting next to somebody.
Yeah. fingers crossed it's not coronavirus. Jamie doesn't look reassured.
Oh, I don't give a Darwinism, I'm the fittest here, so, you know, you two will die before me.
Not if you keep eating Monster Munch, you won't. Anyway. So that was what they were worried about. And then a couple of days later, Ericsson pulled out. And that was a really big deal. I think most of us... So I think the last
they
podcast...
They killed it.
Yeah, there we go. Look at you.
Ericsson killed it.
Well, you may have a point there. And I think that was just after... That happened sort of just after we'd recorded the last podcast, did it?
It happened on the Monday.
I'm not sure they pulled out then.
Okay.
No, anyway. They pulled out the weekend, I think.
No, they pulled out on like the Thursday Monday or something.
Right.
Anyway. And that was obviously a big deal, and you know we all sorts of metaphors. I think Ray went for dominoes falling. Yep. I went for snowballing.
Yeah.
And we pretty much called it. And then by the time we got to Monday, a bunch of other people had pulled out, and we were kind of speculating who was going to be, what was going to be the tipping point.
Yeah.
And we thought certainly if another big kit vendor like Nokia or Huawei pulls out, that'd probably be it. And certainly if big operators start pulling out, because that was one reminder. The main point commercially of going to Mobile World Congress for a lot of people is to get in front of operators and flog them stuff, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's an event that's run by operators because the GSMA is the trade body for global mobile operators and is mm-hmm. effectively owned by said mobile operators.
Yeah.
Doesn't stop them rinsing everyone to the tune of like hundreds of thousands of pounds for their stand.
Well, that's the exhibitors, isn't it? Although some of the operators do have big stands as well, it's true.
But yeah, but basically they make a lot of money from basically charging for access to the operators if you distill it down.
Mm. It's a wasted opportunity now to turn all that booth space into, you know, table tennis.
Yeah, exactly. There was someone shared that floor plan with me where, I know, we could have just had a great big sort of
Or bar space, maybe. Telecoms Olympics. Put on a big kind of nightclub event for the next few days. A rave, yeah. As a charitable thing.
So, yes, all those waste opportunities.
But it seems that the airport is putting out, like, accelerated just before the GSMA had that meeting.
Yeah.
Because they said it was going to be that Friday, and then they moved it to
Wednesday. No one said it. That was a rumour from the Spanish press.
Ah.
There was no official announcement. In fact, GSMA got a bit of criticism for not communicating more. I thought that was a bit harsh, to be honest, because I put myself in their position. I'm not sure what they could say. You know, it's just all a complete mess. Yeah. We don't know what's going on. But I think the essence of it, and then people accuse them of being sort of mercenary for not cancelling it and all that sort of thing. But, you know, if they're mercenary, they were mercenary already. They weren't more or less mercenary because of this thing.
Mm.
But I think, and they haven't officially said this, but this is my interpretation, I think it all came down to insurance. So you cancel something like that, there's tens, maybe even hundreds of millions of quid at stake.
Yeah. Well, let's be frank, most of their revenue, not most of their revenue, but that's the single biggest contributor to their revenue.
Pretty much all their profit, probably.
I don't know, because they have these spin-off events now, but I think it's their biggest revenue generator.
But I don't think, I mean, those events are quite new. I don't know if they necessarily make a ton of money.
Well, the Los Angeles one's pretty big now, and some of the others. Right. So, but I know that one is obviously where
China
most
attracts 80,000 people.
Exactly.
Whereas Mobile Congress is like 100,000, is it?
Yeah, so it's not a huge difference.
Fair enough. All right, no, I'll take that back, because I don't have any actual hard data.
But it's still probably where it's the thing that contributes the most in terms of all the events. That's the biggest single individual
contributor. I bet you they can charge a lot more for stands there than they can in the US or in China.
Well, they famously charge a lot for presence anyway, compared with other trade shows.
Yeah.
You talk to exhibitors who aren't going to be named, but they all say they have to pay a lot of money for
No, they all feel like over a barrel a bit. And they have got what's effectively a monopoly. I mean, there's no other, in terms of massive trade shows, there's no other game in town, is there? With all due respect to my employer, please don't sack me.
Yeah, it's the
we
thing
do lots of great trade
at.
Shows as well.
Yeah, we do, but that's the thing you have to be seen to be seen at. Yeah.
So, I think it came down to insurance. So whose fault is it? So you have people like Ericsson pulling out early, and presumably the terms and conditions go, well, if you pull out, I don't really care what the reason is, you're getting nothing back.
Yeah.
I have a conspiracy theory about Ericsson.
Go on.
So the week of Mobile Congress is a holiday in Sweden. So they just...
They couldn't be bothered.
Yeah, there's another conspiracy theory that Ericsson didn't have anything that was worth showing at this year's event.
We were hearing that yesterday, weren't we?
Which doesn't really stack up with where things are going in the industry in terms of... Because 2 years ago, they were in a much worse position than they are now. So.
No, that seems like bull... But hold that thought, because we had that like 18-month thing that we should talk about as well.
Yeah.
But so whose fault is it? So if you cancel, it's your fault. But if GSMA cancels it, the people who run it cancel, it's their fault.
Yeah.
And they should give you a full refund. I'm sure it's not as black and white as that. But then GSMA didn't want to cancel. They basically wanted the Spanish to force them to cancel, because then GSMA could say it's not their
fault. According to reports.
Yeah, this is all speculation. I don't know.
So there was a wide report that I think has done the rounds saying that the GSMA was waiting for the Spanish to declare a health emergency, because that would then allow them to seek money back from insurers. The Spanish were resistant to doing that, according to this wide report, because they obviously make a lot of money. Catalonian economy makes a lot of money out.
So the Barcelona mayor.
So it was all quite sensitive
resistant.
As well, I think, because there's sort of political sensitivities there if they were seen to be kind of pulling the plug.
Yeah, I think for most of this week there was like quite heated negotiations between. Yeah,
and it's still,
and
but it's still unclear what's
happening
there, as far as I'm aware.
Well, we'll keep an eye on that. I'm sure stuff will come out.
And the latest from the GSMA is not very. So I reached out to them this morning, asking them what the situation is in terms of the Spanish kind of saying it was a kind of health emergency, and they weren't really prepared to give a kind of firm answer on it. So
no, and they were sort of vaguely
alluding.
There's
a funny crunching noise going on in the background. What could it be?
I'll tell you what.
It's definitely noisier than donuts.
It never, you know, who could possibly have anticipated that eating Monster Munch while you record a podcast would lead to some background noise? No one's more surprised than me. And their announcements, they were like going, this is done with the full corporation, but it was all
a bit
vague.
Yeah, that's what they said, but that doesn't really mean that much. No. And I know Ericsson isn't expecting to get its money back.
They said that to you, did they?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it won't stop them trying, though, will it?
It won't stop them trying. Well, but... So I asked their marketing people who, you know, whether they do plan to sort of pursue a refund, and they haven't really decided. But obviously when they pulled out, it was quite early on in the whole process. So they must have thought to themselves then, you know, you look at the T's and C's and everything, you know, if you cancel and you expect that it might still go ahead, because it, there was only LG, I think, and Ericsson at that stage.
Yeah, the big ones,
still,
yeah.
They must have thought there's still a possibility this goes ahead. We're not going to pull out and the whole thing gets completely canned. So
they might seek like a little discount for next year or something as a huge
well, but customer. But I'm guessing they're pretty honest when they say when we pulled out, we thought this thing might still go ahead. And therefore, they kind of made a calculation and said, look at how much we spend on it. We're just going to have to take a kind of hit.
Yeah. Well, and, obviously, it's already
booked. How much they spend there is up for speculation. I mean, I was talking to people within our organisation. We were sort of chatting maybe 12 million or something.
Right.
But in the big, it sounds like a lot of money.
You think that's what Ericsson drops on?
Possibly,
NWC?
But that's not very much for Ericsson, is it? I mean, this is a company that makes 25 billion a year in revenues, yeah? So yeah. It's a fairly small amount of money. And if some of that money, you know, if that's their overall spend and some of that's gone into demos and things that we're going to showcase there, and they're now planning on doing this on the road stuff closer to customers, maybe they can recoup some of that. So I don't know what their actual exhibition fees would have been. But also, I think one of the reasons Ericsson did it, you know, which I've not sort of written about or anything, is they're kind of in a bit of an awkward position in terms of, you know, reputation at the moment. They've got this whole, you know, fine kind of hanging over them. From
the US thing.
Yeah, the US thing. Yeah. And and that's kind of sort of smeared their reputation really, but I think that this these sort of bribery and corruption things happened between 2016. They have to sort of be seen to be doing the right thing, I think, and being taken a responsible position. If they'd gone and sent staff there, and they were saying at the event that we went to, they get about 10,000 people coming through that area, which is like almost a tenth, I think, of the number of people that go to the whole show. And then something had happened. It's not going to do them any favours, is it, in terms of a, you know, a big organisation that's trying to do the right thing in the world?
No, there was and I've chatted to people who know Boyer at Combs MO, and they reckon that it's his style to err on the side of caution, just
exactly,
in a sort of humanitarian sort of way. So who knows? But I mean, you know, this is where I don't like some of the headlines accusing people of being sort of mercenary and just thinking about money.
Well, I think in their case, you can't really say that at all.
And all sorts of factors come into it. Of course you think about money. You're not going to not think about money, but you think about money, you think about health, you think about risk, you think about this, that and the other. It all just factors in there. So I think it's too simplistic to accuse.
The thing is that if they had cancelled purely about the virus, they would have cancelled earlier.
Who, Ericsson?
No, the GSMA.
Well, I think the GSMA cancelled because people had pulled out. They had to cancel.
Yeah.
So, and that there's a criticism of the GSMA that maybe, you know, if Ericsson's sort of taking this responsible, we need to do something for health reasons. And, you know, if you do think this thing is so there's a whole other conversation going on at the moment about, are we panicking too much about coronavirus? I know that some of the comments, I don't know about you guys, but we've been getting comments on the Light Reading message board that it's all a bit hysterical and it's only 2% fatality rate and more people die of influenza every year. And, you know, it's all a bit sort of over the top.
It's two things. I mean, firstly, if I've got it, it doesn't feel too bad so far.
Right.
Just in case you're wondering.
I just feel like people always talk about the mortality rate. They don't talk about catching it and feeling horrible for a month.
Well, that's it. So if we say, like, when my kids...
how easy it is transmissible.
When my kids have been asking about it, I've just been going, it's like flu or a really nasty cold or something like that. It's just a respiratory tract infection, isn't it?
Yeah.
But, I think... You know, so we made the decision collectively, telecoms and Light Reading, to not go as well. And one of the reasons that we had is just what if it had all gone Pete Tong while you were there and then they quarantined the entire place?
Which is also the reason Comscope and I think some other companies, especially smaller ones, pulled out, because if you lose key staff and you're sort of penned down there for days, then that's massive disruption to your business. That's worse than...
Chatting to a mate of mine in PR and she was envisaging this sort of feral Lord of the Flies thing where everyone's locked in the fearer.
Right.
Can you imagine? And then you get little nations, so like Hall 3 versus Hall 4 sort of kicking off and everyone
Game
just...
Of, yeah.
As long as there's Hunger enough games. Food and beer.
Yeah. Hunger Game, yeah. Just some real, real sort of dystopian post-apocalyptic stuff. That could have got quite fun.
One of the things I wonder now, though, with this whole money discussion going on, is that it's not going to hurt people necessarily. I mean, people like Ericsson and Nokia and the very big companies that exhibit there, are now talking about doing these road shows and trying to make up for it with customer meetings, and they're going to have to do a lot more of that, obviously, if as we're led to believe, the MWC is that important to doing business deals and showcasing technologies, then they'll have to make up for it that way. But they have the capacity to do that, whereas maybe some of the smaller exhibitors that don't, it's going to hit them a lot harder.
Yeah.
And then also looking at it from a sort of GSMA perspective, how bad is it for them? So if they can't recoup things on the insurance front, then you know, you would think that, that this is going to be a massive hit for that organisation. It could result in some layoffs, could result in kind of massive
Well,
kind
my
of
back of a fag packet calculation was that they're probably profiting to the tune of 50 mil.
Right.
For given that Ray years ago worked out they're getting about 30 mil or 35 or something like that, I figured it was not unreasonable to assume that it would have tracked up that much.
Yeah.
That's assuming Ray was right, which is a big assumption, of course.
Well, I think he'd looked into the accounts, though, because they post them later
That's
and they
true.
Have
he
to because they're a charitable
organisation. To be fair to the lad. Yeah. And there's other issues that GSMA's got faced. And two of them occurred to me. One was, what if everyone goes and does these roadshows and actually ends up getting a bunch of, let's say, you know, 75% of the business done that they would have done anyway without being there?
Yeah,
then that sets a little bit of a precedent there. I mean, I think it's unlikely.
Well, maybe this is one of the reasons that a lot of companies weren't that bothered about pulling out, because you know everybody likes to do it, but
do
you have to do it? Is it something that's that critical that you can't make up for
it? If you didn't have a booth,
you know,
if you don't have a booth there,
someone pointed out on Light Reading that on a Twitter feed that you know, there's all sorts of events happening around the world at the moment to do with sports, for instance, Champions League stuff.
And
they're going ahead. And then someone else responded, like, well, people actually like the Champions League.
What idiots. Complete idiots.
Why? Are you saying it's not equivalent?
Yeah, completely, completely
Jimmy
redundant
and
moot points.
Why?
It's only
Why,
2 hours.
Because
you're in the Fira for 5 days in a closed environment where you're actually shaking hands and in close proximity with everyone else.
Yeah.
A Champions League match is 90 minutes plus 15 minutes at halftime and turning up 15 minutes beforehand. So that's 2 hours. It's open air and you don't give a monkey's about the other people aside from the ones you go with.
Yeah,
so
it's still a lot of international travel,
isn't it?
It's still a lot of people coming into other countries.
It's not 5 days in a closed, indoor environment.
So you weren't worried when you went and saw the Ireland game?
No,
but
not
where
the
do you? But the thing is,
I mean, Christ, like, are you worried about going on the tube?
No, not particularly.
That's more relevant to the Fira than going to a Champions League game.
But Champions League game, but that's the same point as the tube, though, isn't it? People get onto planes are the worst things for spreading, you know, things that are airborne. That's a lot of times people pick up things. And if you've got a lot of sports events where people are flying in and coming from other parts of the world, and it's often people on air travel that bring infections into other countries anyway.
I think it's about...
Well, it could be.
Amount of time spent with people. Maybe there were people going to Barcelona who had to spend 3 days talking to Chinese customers. You know, it's different than sitting next to...
I wonder if Huawei and ZTE had pulled that entirely, whether it would still have gone ahead.
The other thing I think GSMA's got to watch out for is if it plays hardball with all its partners and goes, you're getting nothing, then, you know, that could permanently damage their business relationship. They might be like, well, how about I have a tiny little booth next year, see how you like them apples.
Right, yeah, well, that's going to be a difficult conversation. Maybe that's why Ericsson, when I sort of asked their marketing people, what are you going to do about sort of seeking a refund, they were like, well, it's a bit non-committal at the moment.
Yeah.
But I mean, it sounds like they're not expecting to get money back, but they've
but
already thought
about... business relationships work both ways.
They do, yeah.
Just because GSMA's got their money already.
And then Nokia didn't respond to questions on that front.
No.
About whether they would seek a refund, so...
No, I imagine it will down the line, but it'll do it low profile through sort of accounts and legal departments and all that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But, however, you know, this is where a journalist could play a role. If someone breaks a story that GSMA is getting a full refund from the FIRA, then a bunch of people can be like, okay, GSMA, how about you pass that along, son? So that could be interesting. And then the only other thing I wanted to say about it is, you know, what effect does the cancellation have on the industry? A few people have been asking that, been going, you know, does it matter? Mainstream, I've been talking to other people in the industry, been asked to go on BBC and say what effects it had. I mean, I think the answer is who knows, because it's unprecedented.
Yeah.
We can't possibly say. I doubt we're going to see some kind of overt sort of aberration on balance sheets.
Well, it's led to some disruption in China in terms of where a lot of manufacturing
supply
gets done
chain
in
yeah.
terms of the supply chain. So,
but I mean, is Ericsson going to sell an order of magnitude less gear because Mobile World Congress was cancelled.
Yeah, they're not really saying that at the moment, but certainly their factory was shut down for a while and has only just reopened.
Well, that's a more significant effect, but I'm saying if it doesn't have the conversations it would have had at Mobile World Congress, will that have a profound business effect?
I suspect there'll be some. It's like when you get, you know, bad weather disruption in the UK, you know, you get 2 days of snow and then you get those Office of Budget, you know, whatever it is, reports coming out saying that the economy only grew by 0.6% in the last quarter because of the bad weather. I suspect there'll be some kind of blip, but I can't imagine it being... it depends how bad it gets, doesn't it? This thing's not over yet. This is a problem. So where does coronavirus go from here? Does it become something that is like that film Contagion, you know, what they were showing in that was 6 million deaths internationally? Or
was that the one where Pierre gave away the whole...
Spoiler.
The one that he spoiled earlier for you at lunchtime.
No,
yeah.
I spoiled one thing.
Or does it... And it could be 6 million deaths, you know, what was the Spanish flu?
That's what's more impactful. I think it is that China is the factor of the world now. And
that's been for a while.
This could massively impact, especially when you look at smartphones in particular.
Yeah.
Like Apple, there's a job called precision tooling. And this is part of the reason why the Chinese have such a sort of monopoly on smartphone manufacturing. It's because they have so many people that are qualified to do this role, and it's order of magnitude more than anyone else around the world. So if that shuts down, does that mean that smartphone production shuts down as well, or the production of radios?
The big story last week was how Foxconn didn't meet the whatever requirements, sanitary requirements.
Yeah, so the Chinese government just shut it down.
Yeah. And I'm like, if Foxconn doesn't meet the requirements, and Foxconn is under so much scrutiny because of Apple, imagine all the other factories.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think what we're all agreeing on is that the business effects of coronavirus are actually far bigger than Mobile World Congress. Mm. But obviously for our little ecosystem, our little world, it's a
half
little
our ecosystem's half, a big
well, our
ecosystem.
Ecosystem is the supply chain as well.
Yeah.
Well, yes, so I'm just talking about the
event. Half
$1 billion
itself. For Barcelona.
Say it again?
Half a billion, yeah.
That's how much half extra...
That's how much they reckon gets spent in terms of hotel bookings, restaurants, bar, the kind of impact...
gets spent on Estrella.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Mm.
And there are some people who are still going, apparently, but...
I know.
Just to drink Estrella.
Maybe Messi will leave at the end of the season and it'll be over for the city.
Right, that'll be it. That'll be the
crushing
final
blow.
Well, because we were wondering, before all this happened, we were wondering whether all the Catalan separatists were going to kick off. Because since the last Mobile World Congress...
Are they at all now?
Oh, they always do.
I tell you what... Yeah.
No, but I mean, it got serious like in the middle of last year, didn't it?
I tell you who's cheering in Barcelona. Just the old people there. They must have been like, yes, nobody on the tube.
Right.
Nobody, you know, no...
I doubt anyone in Barcelona is happy just because of the economic implications.
Yeah, but the old people don't care about that.
Look at you generalising about old people. You're so ageist. You're worse than Jamie. So one last thing I want to say about it is my biggest regret from it, and it's probably quite unprofessional of me, is the social side. Mm. I just really like getting together. There are some people I probably only ever see at Mobile World Congress.
Well, I don't think it's unprofessional. I think that's why a lot of people want to go.
No, I'm saying it's unprofessional of me to not give so much of a toss about the business side of it, that's all.
But a lot of people go because they want to sort of, you know, see people they don't see regularly, and you kind of re-establish relationships and all that stuff. Whether you're a reporter writing about things for... I don't know about you, but it always provides me with some sort of momentum for the year. There's things that you can look back on that come out of it that
100%.
You sort of find yourself writing about.
It kind of sets the narrative.
Sets the narrative
certainly for
the
first half of the year.
And, and once it's not there anymore from our professional perspective, it's quite a big gap, I think.
And then
I'm sure other companies have their own take on it. But in terms of business deals and just meeting people that you normally kind of 100%. Do things with, then it's kind of...
So one thing I want to sign off on there, I'm not going to give it all the details away, but we are organising a UK piss-up to make up for the one that we would normally have on the Wednesday of Mobile World Congress. But I'm not going to tell you when or where. You've got to be as part of our meetup group if you want to come along. So it's up to you, dear listener/viewer. If you want to come along and get drunk with us when you would have been getting drunk in Barcelona, then sign up to the meetup group. I'm sure you can Google it and work it out for yourself. Cool. All right, so talking about Mobile World Congress, I couldn't help dwelling on it when I wrote up this Ericsson thing we went to. So every year, Why are you frowning at Jamie? Just because he's
I'm just laughing at the
Monster Munch situation.
The background noise. It's quite a comforting noise in a way.
It is. It sounds like someone walking through snow.
Yeah, it is.
Do you think that's what they do for like sound effects on telly?
The Foley.
They get someone to eat Monster Munch because it's cheaper than fabricating snow. And I wrote it up. I said my headline. So basically, Ericsson every year does a week or two before Mobile Congress has a big thing where it announces its stuff and just sort of tries to get ahead of the game in terms of Mobile Congress stuff. And they went ahead and did their one yesterday, even though the thing had been cancelled, which stands to reason. They still had stuff to say, and they wanted to give people an update. I reported on it. My headline was something along the lines of Ericsson tries to put a brave face on the Mobile Congress catastrophe. And I had a few people get a bit butthurt in the comments, thinking that I was having a go at Ericsson, but I wasn't at all.
Right.
I was just making my own personal reflection at the event,
yeah.
Which is fine. I've got no criticism of the event or of the speakers or the venue. We went for nice drinks up on the roof of this hotel after. It's all groovy. But I just felt it was a bit like, because I just couldn't get past the disappointment of Mobile Congress being over. So that was my feeling about that. But more to the point, and I'll hand over to you, Ian. You were there as well.
Mm.
Why don't you tell us? I mean, you actually spoke to some people, whereas I didn't bother. Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about what, if anything, you got from
Frederick Yedling, who's the head of networks. I think he was the most senior executive they had there.
Right. Yeah. Well, he's
pretty
he's
senior.
Right there,
he is. He's like head of the whole network business, which is most of their money. Yeah. So yeah, I spoke to him in the morning before it started, but they didn't really have. I don't know if there was like. A big announcement or a big reveal, but then again, you don't really expect that at Mobile World Congress anyway. I mean, they usually have a CEO on stage sort of giving an update on how things are going, and then they show off some products. And I know,
and to be fair, Boyer's speeches, all due respect to the guy, they've been a bit generic, haven't they?
But what's happened in the last 12 months? Nothing really. I mean, we're still, I mean, prior to the last Mobile World Congress, we had Release 15.
Yeah.
So you would have had, non-standalone kit to talk about.
Yeah.
You would have had updates there. Release 16 was supposed to be at the beginning of this year, and then it got delayed by, three months.
Yeah.
So it would have come out post Mobile World Congress anyway. So that's where you're talking about standalone gear, network sharing, virtualization, these sorts of things.
And there was some talk about that.
Yeah.
There was some talk about the core network stuff, and there was some updates on how they're doing on the RAN front. And I mean, it's not.
But you can't really say anything. You can't until really say,
but they were
Release
pretty
16
positive.
Comes out.
I mean, Scott and I were both there, and some of our analysts were there as well. And one thing that we both took away from it, because we had I shouldn't mention his name at the moment because it wouldn't be right. But
we had chats with
actually a couple of analysts and the analysts do know what they're talking about, and they're pretty sort of upbeat about where Ericsson is at the moment
in terms of
its RAN portfolio. And the numbers do suggest they're doing pretty well in terms of, you know, they've kind of turned a corner definitely since Ekholm took charge on getting the kind of profits back up to where they need to be. Obviously been a lot of headcount cuts
and refocusing
stuff,
on their core
refocusing
stuff.
On the core stuff, but they've also pumped a lot of money into R&D, and they've got, you know, so there's this argument going on at the moment that and this is what came out of these little chats, these little comments more than anything that we have with these analysts about something you see turning up in the headlines a lot of them about Huawei's 18-month lead over the competitors, you know, that we shouldn't get rid of Huawei because it's 18 months ahead. Now, I'm not saying this justifies getting rid of Huawei in any way. I think that's a different conversation. But certainly that argument about them being 18 months ahead, I've always thought was a bit spurious anyway.
That's a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, and from what we were hearing from these analysts...
And how do you measure it?
They were saying not at all. Like, Ericsson's well up there in terms of the RAN stuff that it's doing.
They were even saying better.
Even saying it's better at the moment, some of the stuff that it's coming out with. And I just think it's... I think there's a lot of like vested interest in the media that are kind of getting... You know, you've got Huawei obviously trying to speak to people that are sympathetic to Huawei to sort of push its position. You've got the operators who don't want to lose Huawei as a supplier who are kind of trying to sort of show why it's so good. So they sort of... exaggerating how good it is technically. And then on the other side, you've got these stories coming out from certain elements of the US, like the Wall Street Journal, for instance, where they're talking up the kind of security threat that Huawei poses. It's almost like the, you know, the Department of Justice is just kind of talking to their journalists, and they're running with that angle. And it's all becoming a bit kind of trying to get a sort of clear, like, proper opinion about what's going on.
I wasn't going to bring that up at this stage, but I might ask Jamie, because Jamie's been keeping quite a close eye on the sort of negative briefings coming out of the US about Huawei. Why don't you just give us a little update on the state of play? And you can talk about that other thing that we spoke about earlier with, you know, what the implications are for relations between them and us.
It's, I mean, it's an odd one because they've spoken to, I personally think that it's a bit of a propaganda war. This is nothing like what emerged in the Wall Street Journal is nothing but a PR campaign to turn the tide of public opinion against Huawei.
I agree entirely.
Because if this is the smoking gun which Europe is after, and the Wall Street Journal journalist did point out that the US officials didn't actually present any evidence to them, just made the claims. Why are they talking about this smoking gun with the Wall Street Journal instead of presenting it to authorities of allied nations?
So
that's always been the underlying thing. If you've caught them red-handed, then just get on with it.
I mean, it's I mean, it's and the other factor is going back to the operators. I think at one point the operators are going to turn. I've got to turn around and say, hold on a second. It's like, you know, the U.S. government is saying that Huawei is the intelligence gathering arm of the Chinese government. It has been for the last 10 years. The operators are going to have to turn around at one point and go, we're not completely incompetent. We're not that bad at our jobs. You know, that a vendor can sneak a back door in and we haven't picked up on it, whether by whether on purpose or by accident over the last decade. I mean, this is, you know, Huawei is in what, let's say, the networks of 100 plus telcos around the world.
Yeah.
And that's 100 the security engineers were 100 different telcos searching over a 10-year period, and they've never discovered it.
And you're telling me they're not looking extra hard at Huawei gear for exactly that sort of stuff?
Because the telcos will be held... I mean, they've got as much to lose from Huawei being found out for espionage as Huawei itself.
Yeah.
I mean, if, let's say, it all comes out to be true, I mean, would you carry on being an EE customer? Considering there's Huawei in the core and there's Huawei RAN everywhere, you know, how many enterprise customers would sue Vodafone because there's potential trade secrets?
And a point that I think Huawei made in its own response to some of this stuff earlier in the week was to draw up the sort of Edward Snowden things about, you know,
I mean, the US are never innocent.
And the fact that, you know, Russia's sort of well known for kind of trying to snoop on and sort of infiltrate. You don't need, you know, this whole idea that you have, you know, you need to have sort of, you know, radio equipment installed to do this sort of stuff. Or
That's good.
It's
old,
very, very
it's good old,
you
what
don't
they call signals intelligence. Yeah, has been going on
just,
for
it's
decades.
It's just very bizarre.
The point that we made sort of before about the UK's decision on it. So I think this, Ray was on that podcast, and we certainly both agreed that if our experts say that risk can be managed if we put the restrictions which they have in, then the political decision was listen to your own experts or appease Trump. And we decided to listen to our own experts. And I wrote a piece, and I'm going to hand it back to Jamie in a sec because he's got some follow-up thoughts on it. But I wrote a piece saying Trump throws his toys out the pram over the Huawei decision because of another report in Reuters or something that apparently Trump had a really conversation
with Boris Johnson. Right,
and was just shouting at him.
Yeah.
And I sort of joked, I could imagine Boris Johnson sort of getting a steady on, old chap.
Yeah.
No need for that sort of language sort of thing. But clearly, it's caused problems. And Jamie, you got some thoughts about what the sort of longer term implications of that might be?
Yeah. So I think it was a week before last, or maybe last week. The House of Representatives, which is half of the Congress over in the U.S.,
passed, it is Congress. It's half of the sort of the legislature.
No. Congress is.
I thought Congress House is what they call.
Is the Senate right. And the House of Representatives. It's like House of Lords and House of Commons. They passed what's called a simple resolution, which sometimes can lead to a bill, sometimes can lead to the foundation of a committee, but in this case it presented the opinion of the congressmen in the U.S., congressmen and women in the U.S. And this one basically says that all Chinese companies are under de facto control of the Chinese government. Huawei was the intelligence share gathering arm of the Chinese government, and the UK decision was wrong about how to deal with Huawei. So basically, this is this is the House of Representatives' opinion, which, if they can get the House, the senators to pass the same resolution, then it can be drafted into a bill, and then it can be presented to the president for either law or an executive order.
Yeah.
So basically, this is saying, this is our opinion, and it can be used to form a committee for further investigation, form a bill, or to dictate or force the certain departments in the US government and how they act in the future. For instance, the State Department and the UK trade deal coming up over the next 7 or 8 months.
Yeah.
So effectively, by saying, we believe China is spying and we believe the UK is wrong, I reckon this could be used as the stick rather than the carrot to force the UK to change its approach to Huawei over the next 6 or 7 months if it wants a beneficial trade deal.
Which would be completely consistent with Trump kind of negotiating policy.
And Pompeo as well, he came out a couple of weeks ago and turned around and said, well, you know, the UK still has time to change its mind.
Yeah.
You know, that was one of the statements that he made when he was on his press tour.
But it wouldn't be so good for UK-China relations, one guesses.
No, no. So.
Well, that's the thing, because Jamie recently wrote up that Germany's basically doing the same as us. Yeah. And, you know, the
Germany's got more at stake because they've got huge export interests in China, basically. Like, the whole reason I think Huawei has come in and become so dominant in Germany is all to do with the sort of, like, there's loads of machine parts, apparently, that Germany ships to China. I didn't realize quite how much it was, but...
They're very good at that sort of thing.
Machine parts and cars and, it's just huge.
Precision engineering
it's much bigger
is,
than
is
ours.
A massive thing for them.
Cars is huge, then.
Cars is huge. Machine parts is massive for what Germany ships to China. I didn't
especially,
realize
especially
big.
Premium cars.
Yeah.
Like, if you look at Audi and BMW in particular, I think export a huge number of vehicles to China each year.
Yeah.
It's a and it's the German automotive industry has a massive lobby.
Yeah.
It has a really influential lobby in Germany.
Yeah. And it's interesting looking at Ericsson's little charts of where it's got live 5G networks now. Because I noticed one of the ones not on the list, even though they apparently have a radio access network deal with them, is Deutsche Telekom.
Right.
So Deutsche Telekom is obviously heavily, heavily reliant on Huawei in the radio access network, and I believe it also uses it in the core. So that's Germany's biggest operator.
Germany didn't say like a 35% type of thing, did they, Jamie?
They haven't said anything.
They haven't said anything. They're waiting for the whole.
That was rumor rather than that right statement.
Well, Merkel tried to delay the whole decision, I think, until the EU had moved forward.
Delaying it till after the EU summit in March.
Yeah.
Okay.
But this is they've agreed a strategy paper. In reports anyway, and this is the strategy paper that could potentially form the foundation of a bill to indicate how Huawei would interact.
So the thing about Europe, in this great geopolitical game that's going on right now of US versus China, is we're kind of in the middle, aren't we? So US has said, fine, we don't mind, we'll go to trade war with China, but we're going, well, hold on a sec, we don't necessarily want to join you in that trade war. And Trump seems to be having a hissy fit every time we don't do exactly what he wants. So, yeah, that kind of backs up my original theory, that my original feeling that we were right not to kowtow to him. Anyway, we better move that along. Have we sort of more or less covered the Ericsson thing? I got to say, we had quite a funny dinner after.
We did.
So we had some nice drinks there. I'm not going to name any names, but we went out for dinner with a few people I know. There's this one analyst who was so pissed.
He's watching, he knows who he is.
Yeah, he was so pissed. It was hilarious. We actually had to prevent him from having any more wine.
Yeah.
So that was quite funny. But we're not going to be dicks and name the person. Sorry, did you have anything more serious to say about the Ericsson thing? Okay. Yeah. Although I think we're getting towards the end anyway. We've got one more segment, which I'll pass the ball back to Jamie. You've been covering the latest developments in India. So why don't you tell us about that?
Yeah, I mean, so India's a... it's one of the more interesting markets, I think, worldwide at the moment, purely because of the potential of the markets, i.e. the size of the population, the fact that they're becoming
more affluent very, very quickly, yeah. and the potential for the digital economy, i.e. the foundations yeah. of connectivity infrastructure hadn't been laid there, so there's a lot of money to be made.
Feels like sort of China 5 years ago or something.
Yeah,
like
yeah, yeah. Well, it's the BRICS acronym, but then realistically only China out of the BRICS acronym turned into a yeah. reality. Like Brazil, Russia and India are still lagging behind, really.
Yeah.
So what has been going on recently is this to and fro in between the major telcos and the Indian government over spectrum license fees, which were due, payments were due 10 years ago, I think it was, 10, 12 years ago.
Right.
Been a dispute over the last 10, 12 years, and obviously during that period, penalties and interest fees have racked up. Bharti Airtel and Vodafone Idea now owe something along the lines of $7 billion each. Yeah.
Don't get me started on Indian yeah. numbers.
But this is...
Lakh and crore. I can't get my head around it.
A crore is 10,000 yeah. Rupees.
What's a lakh?
A lakh is 1,000 crore, I think it is.
Okay, fair enough.
But then the big issue is it's going to be a duopoly. Like, there's only, realistically, there's only three telcos yeah. left in
or
the
even
industry.
A monopoly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
given the buck. So when you say duopoly, sorry to sort of finish your sentence for you, but there's very real, I mean, Vodafone has threatened a few times that it might just.
Well,
it's
getting
out.
On to that. Yeah,
sorry,
yeah.
I'll shut up.
So there's three players left in the market yeah. Outside of BSNL and MBNL, which is it MBNL?
MTNL.
MTNL.
MSNBC.
And both of them are state-owned and being propped up at the moment. Then you've got the three remaining players, Vodafone Idea, Bharti Airtel and Reliance Jio. Vodafone Idea is Nick Reed, Group CEO of Vodafone, has threatened that unless the Indian government starts playing ball, he's going to pull out of India.
Yeah, just write off the whole thing.
Yeah, Idea can't survive. The whole merger was about survival anyway, so yeah. how is that going to survive? Bharti Airtel are just as ruined by this $7 billion fine. They haven't got yeah. any cash. And Reliance Jio have sold off their tower assets to pay for their fine, which wasn't anywhere near as high as the other two anyway.
Because they haven't been around that long.
So you're going to have, realistically, Bharti, which is poor, and Reliance Jio, which has paid off its fine, left in the Indian market, and these two state-owned useless telcos.
Yeah, they don't really do much.
So it's, I mean, the entire way the Indian government and the regulator has managed competition over the last 5-6 years is so laughable. It just beggars belief.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you couldn't actually believe this was happening unless it did actually happen.
Yeah.
You know, it's like
faulty towers or something.
Well, it was like that story I was telling about flying back from Dublin the other day, and you know, unless it actually happened,
right? Oh, you mean the nightmare you had getting home?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Unless it actually happened, genuinely wouldn't believe it happened.
Perfect storm of screw-ups.
Oh, yeah. I'll have to talk about this afterwards. I haven't heard the Dublin story.
Oh, it was a nightmare. Yeah.
This is not going to be relevant to the thing, but...
No, but it's a good story. I'll tell you now anyway, actually. So I got delayed in, I was in the...
Pierre's not going to approve.
You'll like it, Pierre. You'll like it, Pierre. So I was out watching Wales Island in the Six Nations last week. And then the flight back was during Storm Kira.
Right.
So first of all, we got to the airport early, too early for my liking, but Sparky's a bit of a panicky flyer.
Sparky.
Then we got delayed
Classic Sparky.
By 5 hours because Heathrow stopped taking flights in.
Right.
So we were sat in Dublin Airport for, I think, a total of about 7 hours by that point. Then when we can actually take
not bad.
Off.
Good whiskey there.
Yeah, we were also...
We'd been on the lash for 3 days.
2 days on the piss, yeah. Then when we were actually allowed to board, everything stopped and people started coming back into the terminal. And then all of a sudden there was blue flashing lights on the runway. Turns out the pilot, as he was going up the stairs to get on the plane, got knocked off balance by the high winds. He fell back down the stairs, broke his leg, had to be taken off the hospital... Everyone else got sent back into the terminal and we actually had to wait for an on-call pilot to, first of all, complete his mandatory hours of rest between flights, then get to the airport and then get us all on the plane. My trip back from Dublin took about, it must have been about 10 and a half, 11 hours.
And the flight itself is okay when you got on it? Or
Yeah, it was a bit bumpy. Well, 55 minutes.
Yeah, I've been delayed in Dublin airport. There's only so many consolatory pints of Guinness you can have before it just stops. You just think, no, I'm done now.
Before you get diarrhea, you mean?
Well, there is that. Yeah, I think we've covered that in the podcast before. There's a sort
nice. About nice ending.
It's about 4-pint maximum of Guinness before you got to switch to the lager, or it all starts to.
Oh yeah, Ian, you and
have
there.
An effect.
Ian was.
I missed that one. Yeah.
Was that the Dublin?
Yeah,
podcast?
That one stuck in my mind. That.
Yeah.
But yeah, back to the point.
Yeah, go on.
Indian government and regulator completely incompetent when it comes to managing competition, because they seemingly favoured Reliance Jio in the opening
it
years.
Seems to give them a lot of help.
Well, they kept
started.
They kept on allowing them to extend this free offer when they were, by
and they gave
regulation.
Help with Spectrum. They gave them help with like national licences. Sorts of things.
And then, you know, managing their Spectrum auctions, how often has Spectrum gone unsold at there? And, where else in the world does Spectrum go unsold?
Yeah.
I mean, nowhere. They're willing to pay above the odds how much went for 3G Spectrum and, in Italy and in Germany, how much does it cost there?
Yeah.
And you got 4G Spectrum going unsold in India. Yeah. Surely they're charging too much. It's the whole thing. Yeah. 4 or 5 years
and then,
of utter incompetence.
And I'm not going to suggest for one second there's any corruption in the Indian government, but it just so happens that the telco that's benefiting most from all this is run by India's richest man.
Yeah.
Just saying, all right? Just leaving that out.
I was going to ask, wasn't there something happening this week with the Supreme Court to do with...
Oh, this is
that's
the
what you just covered.
Yeah. So basically...
So they've said... What is it exactly they've said?
So they cough up.
So Vodafone Idea and Bharti Airtel wanted to go, right, we'll pay...
Yeah.
The Spectrum fees, but in return, you've got to, first of all, waive all the penalties and the interest fees, and then secondly, let us pay it over a 10-year period.
Right.
And in exchange...
Said no.
Yeah. And in exchange, we'll carry on doing business.
Right.
But the Supreme Court went, nope, pay it by March 13th.
Because I think actually, of the total amount owed, the majority of it is fines and interest.
Yeah,
it's more than doubled. The original amount's more than doubled.
So as you say, they are morons then, basically. They just basically want to kill their telecom sector and leave it
with
no competitors.
I mean, they're cash grabbers by the looks of it. They want as much money out of... They're using this as, we're going to pluck the money tree as opposed to use telco as a... as the compounding factor and the catalyst for growth across of the verticals, which is how it's being viewed in the US, in the UK, and China for it even.
Yeah.
You know, they're using connectivity as the building blocks rather than a cash cow we can get profit from immediately.
And I'll say one other thing about Jio, which is owned by India's richest man. Jio is the one that's quite openly lobbying against them getting let off.
Right.
So, well, they've already paid their fine.
They've already paid their fine. It wasn't that much.
It was a few lakh crore.
They got loads
of money.
Reliance Industries has got loads of money.
So basically, if the Indian government did do an about face, they'd have to answer to Mukesh Ambani or whatever this rich guy's name is.
Ambani,
And he'd be like, Mukesh not happy.
Yeah.
And there would be implications there. So you just wonder, and I don't know. I'm just speculating. You don't know how much of this is made, how much of the decision making is outright corrupt, how much of it is just real politic, how many interdependent things are going on. But clearly, as Jamie says, the most sensible thing for the health of the country and its infrastructure would be to find some affordable level for those other people to cough up. And then just let everyone get on with competing and having a vibrant telecom sector in
India. This is the thing. I mean, you can't... If the government gave in every single time a telco moaned, I mean, the whole industry would be absolutely
they
ruined.
They like a moan.
Telcos
it's disappointing
moan
in a way,
all the
though,
time.
Because I think, if you go back a few years before Reliance Jio came into the market, India's telecom sector was a bit of a mess, wasn't it?
It was stagnant and overpriced.
And lots and lots of fragmentation.
Yeah. Really dated infrastructure.
And like little circles where certain operators were present, but then not in other parts of the country.
Oh, the digital
Very fragmented.
Yeah.
You know, and I think so it's gone from that to, and then you wanted it to maybe go to, say, three or four national players, maybe five in a country that big. And it could work really well. And Reliance Gear would force the other companies to be more competitive and to improve their infrastructure because it's using very modern kit, apparently. And that's been happening. And then they've sort of carried on going, and it's just ended up to be just Reliance Gear. It's like, which is obviously
at some point,
Reliance is going to go, well, hang on a minute. We don't really see a need to make any effort anymore, because that's generally what happens in those kinds
of
situations.
And then what happens if it is a monopoly?
Well,
it's presumably be very bad for consumers.
You would think so, because generally that's what monopolies are.
That's why we don't like them.
The one thing you do have to bear in mind as well, and this isn't, I think this is a very, very bad reflection on the regulator as well. It hasn't put a floor on the price of data. So, in a lot of places, they put a floor on how low price per gigabit can go to ensure that the market is sustainable in the long run. If you actually have a look at the price per gigabyte on average worldwide, India is so ridiculously low.
It was giving it away for a while, wasn't it?
Well, I think even now, because Bharti Airtel and Vodafone Idea, they've had to go down to the same sort of levels. It's something like 26 cents a gigabyte. And, you compare it to the UK, like France is really cheap at something like 3 or 4 euros. Like even the UK isn't too bad. Like the average is like €7 or something like that. Go across to the US, it's like $11. But like 25 cents, that's
nothing.
Got to come up. If the Indian telco economy is gonna survive, it's going to go up.
So do you think, just to finish it off, because we're nearly running out of time, if you were a betting man, do you think Vodafone will pull out, or do you think they'll sort it out?
Yeah, they're gone.
You heard it first here.
There's so much pressure on Vodafone at the moment. You know, they've got to find money. If you look at what's going on, like the UK, they're under a lot of pressure because they've got to spend a lot of money to fix the Huawei problem. Germany, they've got spectrum auctions coming up, and it's the mid-band spectrum auctions, which is going to be expensive. If you look at Spain, you got a lot of MVNO action, which is putting pressure on the mainstream telcos. If you look at Italy, Iliad came in and completely ruined that market, and they're facing a lot of legal challenges in terms of the network sharing agreement they got going. Africa, Africa's looking quite positive for them, to be perfectly honest. But they're facing so many headaches in Europe, you've got to turn around and go, right, okay,
just
India...
Don't need this aggro.
It's a lot of potential there, but are we going to bankrupt ourselves waiting for that potential to be realised?
Because
it's a headache that you just don't need.
Every time they do their quarterlies, there's some nasty bit of the thing saying we had to write off all this because of India or whatever.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. I think we're done there. So thanks a lot, guys. Still a bit sad about Mobile World Congress, isn't it? Are you sad? Or are you relieved?
I liked it last year, I have to say.
Yeah.
Sometimes I feel a bit stressed out there, but I quite enjoyed it last year. I'm sad on the whole, because even if you don't enjoy it, it's the thing you do for work, and it sets you up for the next few months.
Lives,
it's important.
It?
So yeah,
you,
it is sad.
Yeah, I am. I think I've always found it a very, very, very good week.
Yeah.
You know, you go out there, you see loads of people, you get some really interesting information out of it. I think it's a very, very beneficial week.
Yeah. No, I agree. It's sad, and that's that. But we can look forward to next year. Starts counting.
As long as there's not another virus.
Yeah, as long as someone doesn't sneeze
or this
somewhere
thing
near Barcelona.
Carry on turning into a...
This what?
Knows, maybe this thing's still going to be going on next year.
Oh, well, then we'd have bigger problems than Mobile Congress, I think. All right, I'll leave it on that apocalyptic note. Thanks a lot for listening, and make sure you join us for the next one.